Okay, the tape's back on. Yeah, it is. Kind of maybe got to an end point on a topic, but would like to still pursue a little bit more, I guess, your education, a sense of where the milieu in which the education happened, but perhaps more along the lines of curriculum, especially perhaps as things loosened up and you were able to do more things, your parents weren't, you know, sitting on you saying, study, study, study. If that's something you want to pursue, I mean...
Well, I can just give you a sort of a quick synopsis of...
Yeah, and perhaps with the aim of why it ended up in med school or ended up at American University in Beirut or something like that.
The school I went to is the International College. I mean, again, by American standards, it has a very rigid curriculum. Not much flexibility. I mean, hardly any electives. And it was forced to comply with the curriculum of the Lebanese baccalaureate for high school. So this is a standardized test. But the attitude was very pro-education rather than pro-instruction, which I cherish a lot, basically. I had many, many outstanding teachers who made education fun rather than a chore.
So you mean the emphasis was more put on, like, curia or investigating things as opposed to these are the 17 parts of grammar you need to know, or?
No, not that quite. Not quite that.
Okay.
Because, that was a shortcoming of the system, not just at the International College, but definitely throughout the Middle East, is there is no emphasis on inquisitive, sort of scientific, experimental approaches. Maybe it's very entrenched in Arab history. It's much more analytical than experimental. They did tremendous jobs, in, you know, 1,000 years ago in translating the Greek and Latin, and actually they preserved it for the West. And they analyzed it, you know, ad infinitum, basically.
And it was their analysis really more than anybody else's was translated into Hebrew and then, of course, into Latin. Then it wasn't even so much Aristotle's texts that were important, but, of course, the commentaries that went.
Yeah, so, that's... And a lot of it went back through Spain and through that connection. But, I mean, it's definitely growing up, there wasn't any emphasis. Actually, there was some downgrading of the experimental attitude. But the teachers were, you know, first they were a very respected class of people, and they definitely enjoyed what they were doing. I mean, I think the International College probably recruited by far the best teachers available. And those people were so stimulated by what they were doing, and they definitely transmitted that. So, but I'm just trying to dissociate that from the experimental attitude or lack
almost
of
more
that.
Of an attitude of the way they taught that was infectious or that got you.
Yeah, exactly. My problem with the educational system is, as we got closer to the Lebanese curriculum, which is sort of the equivalent of the high school program in this country, it became very mundane, very boring. And that became almost anti-intellectual. Now that I think about it, there were options whether to take a mathematicals or a literature or some other aspects towards the end of high school. I took sort of the mathematics route. But I had occasion to look at what they taught in biology and other things that I did not take. And they were literal translations from like 1940 French texts. And that was mandated pretty much by the government. So it was horrible pretty much. But what I did was sort of use that to study a lot on my own. I relied heavily on American textbooks, high school textbooks in the sciences.
And these you went to a library and got?
Yeah, the high school library would have them.
So they would have the other texts?
Yeah, I definitely vividly remember the biology text.
And you just would go pull them off the shelf?
Yeah, physics text. Mostly biology and physics and chemistry.
And these, we're talking, you know, textbooks. I mean, I could pull out my Stryer biochem. I mean, or are we talking more also like essays on evolution? Or, I mean, were there also that sort of?
Both. Definitely the textbooks plus additional material. Mm-hmm. I got to be very much enamored by mathematics and physics, sort of theoretical physics at that time. And that was, for me, was going to be a definite career option. To go more into mathematics.
Who did you talk with about this? Or were there other students, colleagues?
Nobody.
I mean, your father wasn't sitting, you know, saying, oh, here's another, you're reading biology, that's great.
No, that was...
Father wasn't doing this himself also, maybe keeping abreast of medical...
Oh, my father kept with more
like
clinical,
right.
Because he was really into practice.
True.
But not with sort of the basic sciences of it.
Where do you think the math and theoretical physics and all that
came from?
Yeah.
Oh, I never thought of that.
Perhaps it doesn't come from any. I mean,
there was definitely an emphasis that growing up, I think that the sciences were to be coveted over. But again, not with the attitude of the experimental aspect of sciences, as much as I think as a selection process. That people who make it in the sciences are the smarter people and therefore they can succeed. And that's why every mother wanted her children to be, or at least in Ras Beirut, her children to be very good in the sciences and mathematics. So there was this undertone there.
Just then, and just the general, as you say, pressure, which lightened up as you got older and you did better in school.
Oh, I mean, that pressure let up,
but
you know, since
was
I was 10 or 11.
Still in the back of all the... perhaps the influence one's parents have or the attitudes that they display toward their children and in communicating to their children what they want from them, perhaps it was the science.
That may have been part of it too. I think a lot of it, now come to think of it, a lot of it came from the literature, which showed me, when I was even 10 years old, I had a teacher who encouraged me to join the British, God, what you might call it now, sort of the cultural attaché part to the British embassy.
Oh, okay. They just had
They had like an open library that you could subscribe to. And even when I was 10 years old, I would spend the summer going there almost daily and picking up books and reading them. And so that was at a sort of very elementary level. I was in elementary school. Mm-hmm. And then in high school, I had a couple of American teachers and they used to have a program where the American teachers, you know, fresh graduates basically from college, would go spend a year in Beirut at the International College, teach a couple of advanced courses in usually English literature or something. And that was a very small group of students, like we were three from my class.
This is also this age, this 10, 11, 12?
No, this is
later
past
high
that.
School.
That's like 14, 15, no, more like 16, 15, 16. And that, you know, we went real deep into English literature.
So you were citing or echoing Graham Greene earlier.
Yeah,
so
we read that way back then, probably.
Were you also reading these sorts of, were you reading novels from
we're
the
reading
British?
Reading novels from, you know, Kafka, Mann, Hermann Hesse. We read Shakespeare, a lot of Shakespeare. It was an eye opener for me in terms of you can access education on your own, you know, because there was the regular curriculum that the other students were having, which was very dull and boring, and then there was this curriculum that we pretty much designed on our own. You know, go find the novel you want to read and discuss it tomorrow.
Kind of like an honors class or a
tutorial. It's something like that, yeah. It's something
more
like
informal, perhaps.
Very
though.
Informal. Okay. Actually, we used to meet in the, you know, in the lobby of the dorms there or somewhere else. Just two or three from my class, and you know, the other.
And you just, was this organized though by the school or by these teachers, or was this something that maybe even some of the students had way back when or whatever sort of set up, and it was just.
I don't know who had set it up, but it was an ongoing program where
you knew about it before you got to the age or something.
Yeah, it was just It was at that time. It was a real healthy program. I know the teachers who went from here just loved it because they had very flexible time and they were doing something usually they enjoyed a lot, taking those advanced or honors type classes.
And had students who were perhaps eager and the motivational aspect didn't need to be practiced or taught.
Exactly.
The stuff itself.
But it did show me that you can access knowledge and education on your own and you can pretty much do it, because that was a definite deviation from the norm that existed there. And I think I must have picked up on that now that you ask the question, because after that year, that's when I started reading the sciences and mathematics on my own. I got a lot into the history of mathematics and physics. And I was really taken by mathematics and theoretical physics.
And again, no explanation or no sense of why that was the math or the theory. I mean, we are talking about really a specific kind of knowledge, which is, you know, highly abstract and, if you will, very much divorced from the kind of experimental hands-on stuff that you do.
Absolutely.
Now.
It's something I've never figured out. It used to excite me a lot, a lot.
It's not a trick question. It's actually a very, not that I look for these things, you know, you all have the same background or the same things, but it's a very common occurrence that the initial interest and the area that people do very well in, you know, biologists sometimes, the people I've interviewed and the Beckman interview, very strange. It's always mathematics, and then there's some point at which it's rejected for being highly abstract and having nothing to do with the world. But it seems to be the mathematics, not physics, not chemistry, but mathematics.
Yeah, mathematics was my love in high school. And I got to be real good at it. I mean, and I didn't drop it until I went into medical school. Because even as an undergrad, I had to take, again, a fixed curriculum to enter medical school, which I had decided on. But I also majored in mathematics, side by side, and I was pretty much carrying double the load of everyone else. And I got, you know, and mathematics to me was like, just go to class and that's it. Didn't even have to do homework or anything. But I had to drop that once I entered medical school, and that's one reason I was very miserable the first year in medical school.
Why the choice of medical?
Why the choice of medical school? I think,
in other words, and at the sacrifice of what you love the most. I mean, you really gave it up, and it made you.
Yeah, many reasons. I mean, it was many reasons. I think. I guess it's one of those career choices one makes. By the time I was finishing high school, I was sensing trouble in Lebanon. And friction was building up.
And we are talking
73, 74. And you could sense trouble. I mean, there was even now starting to have polarization at my high school. Mm-hmm. Very funny, because that group was like very homogeneous until the last year I was in high school. And then starting polarizing real bad. And
over what issues? Or
over the same political issues that resulted in the Civil War. I think you'll find more than one person say that what happened in my high school and the university during that year contributed quite a bit to the escalation towards the Civil War. I don't think it ignited it or anything, but it was definitely a telling sign.
Intellectual underpinning or something of it, or the
something like that. That even, you know, even the highly educated, the people exposed most to other kinds of people, basically, got so polarized. I could tell that politically Lebanon was becoming very unstable, and I couldn't plan on a career in Lebanon. That was becoming quite obvious.
Was this something you talked again about with friends or your father or your mother? I mean, was it just something you kept to yourself and just
something I probably never articulated that way.
Mm-hmm. Something that you saw later that you were
getting
something ready for. And
yeah, something I sensed, but I may have never articulated. Mm-hmm. I definitely didn't discuss it with my parents. They let me make all those choices on my own, basically. So that was one reason to avoid, you know, more questionable careers. I really believe.
Artist or
yeah.
mathematician.
Even, I mean, I do believe, you know, I told you I was very interested in the history of mathematics. And two things I learned from that influenced my career choice. One was that to achieve in mathematics or theoretical physics, mm-hmm. I mean, this you have to be very, you know, fully supported by society, basically. I mean, you have to have a very stable society, healthy society, wealthy society too. I mean,
what were you studying the history? What were you equating? What were the situations or the cultures that you were looking at in the past that were
mostly looking at European, the physics and
I think of theoretical right, and I think the 20th century, you know,
yeah, 19th and 20th century
of the pre-war Germany.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and 19th and 20th.
I also just think of the developments of it in the United States as under duress almost, and with this also biology actually, with these people uprooted and in places where they must have felt, I think of someone like Luria in Vanderbilt or, I got the right person in Vanderbilt. No,
not Vanderbilt. Delbrook and Luria?
Yeah, or? Right, but Luria was the one who was in Vanderbilt, in Nashville.
Yeah.
Yeah, I switched them around. Okay. But, I think of it maybe perhaps as both very stable versus, perhaps you're wrong. That's interesting that...
I don't think anything in the U.S., meaning instability in the U.S. itself?
No, you're right. It's more of these people and their sense of themselves and what they're doing in the States all of a sudden.
No matter where you came from, once you hit the U.S., you feel stability.
Sure. Especially the more brilliant, already established.
So that's not, the kind of instability there, which I think was validated by the events. So that was one reason. The other thing I learned from... which I'm not sure if that's a true assessment or not, but I sort of came to the conclusion that mathematics was really a career, or maybe more like a hobby for the very young. I really believed in that all those people who made brilliant discoveries in mathematics or theoretical physics, they were pretty much done by 25.
Common belief in
and all those sort of misleading pictures of Einstein, as an older man, mm-hmm. Discovering the secrets of the universe are so misleading because he was less than 25 when he even came up with the general theory of relativity, not to mention the specific theory. So I was very disillusioned with that because I saw myself, having wasted so many years in high school not developing those skills to the level I wanted, and then having, didn't have much option in university to develop them sort of creatively. Didactically, you could learn all what there is to be.
You just weren't in the right place, perhaps.
Yeah, and I did learn that. I took all those courses, and I got to learn, all the matrix algebra and calculus I needed to formally,
sure.
But there wasn't any room for creativity. So I think I was in the wrong place at the wrong time. And at that point, I did consider coming to the States to study mathematics. I actually had sat for the SATs in high school. And I scored very high on those. And I guess a couple of places offered me to...
It's within a mathematics department
As
well.
Like,
you hadn't started looking at medical school here? Or?
Yeah, no. It was mathematics or economics. For some reason, I also looked at economics.
A lot of mathematics. Depending on the econ
theoretical,
department. Sure.
Theoretical economics.
Do you remember where?
One was Chicago, University of Chicago, and the other, for the life of me, I can't remember. But definitely Chicago, because I considered that very seriously, agonized over it. I think I was young, And it wasn't the norm then for people to leave home at 17 or 18. Sure. So I didn't do it.
Were a lot of your friends and colleagues also going to the American University in Beirut? I mean, was this also a community kind of...
It was, pretty much. It was sort of the best you could do if you stayed in the Middle East.
Sure.
Probably still is. Mm-hmm. With all the trouble, it's probably still a true statement. So mathematics became less and less of an option as the years went by. And primarily maybe because I was in the wrong place at the wrong time. Maybe it had
only like 3 years left before you had to do it, right?
Yeah, right, exactly. I mean, yeah, in retrospect, yeah. I sometimes wish, like, in high school, I could have taken off 2 years and just studied mathematics, you know, abstract theoretical mathematics. It's something. I don't regret, but if I had to do something, I would have wanted it to be that way.
I guess you've talked about reading a lot, not just mathematics, but maybe we should use that as an example, again, of getting the sense. You also noted now, at least in looking back on it, perhaps you did as well at the time, that not a whole lot of your friends and colleagues were doing this. It was sure there were probably other people who had spent a lot of time in the library, but I mean, this is kind of a systematic, it seems, approach to the thing. Go find every textbook on mathematics, or that's where you said you were interested in the history of it as well. Perhaps that, you know, not just to find out more about the content of mathematics, but how it develops and come to some pretty, actually, I think, what do I want to use for the word? Some pretty, not advanced, but shrewd conclusions about the development and history of mathematics from reading these things. And it takes a little bit of work and quite a bit of energy, I think, to come to these kinds of conclusions. You already had this kind of mentality of looking at it from this historical perspective. What were you, you know, reading? Was there something, two or three texts or whatever that really, you know, grabbed you, or was there something that, or is this just a general kind of ongoing process that now it would be hard to dissect like that?
I had sort of broad-based interest in mathematics and its history. I was most captivated by Riemann, Gauss, Leibniz, Poincaré, you know, late 19th, early 20th century mostly, but even earlier than 19th, you know, earlier 19th.
I guess you were reading, you know, Leibniz in English, or?
Yeah, in English, okay. Yeah. Évariste Galois, that was
just about every, you've just, I think, gone through the list. I mean, yeah. you've left out maybe, I can't come up with his name, Fourier, but that's about
Fourier.
It.
the couple that were very impressive were Évariste Galois and the Indian guy.
I can't pronounce his name, but I know who you mean.
You know who I mean. The guy who trained with Hardy.
And I have hard trouble even pronouncing the name. When I see it, I recognize it. But
so you know who I'm talking about. I mean, but you know. Like Galois died when he was 19 or something, and this guy died when he was 20 something.
You were impressed.
I was impressed by their achievement, basically, a lot, by their thought process.
Age identification
at that time, probably.
And what about the other areas? Let's say theoretical physics. I mean, again, perhaps it's the names that we can, you know, come to. I'm thinking, you know, Delbruck read Schrodinger, and just, you know, that was his, and Schrodinger's another physicist, but I mean, and that was his, you know, raison d'etre to go into biology, and it was an obsession, you know, his whole life, the rest of, you know, to make something from what Schrodinger was just theoretical and not based on any kind of experiment, you know, make it true through the kind of experiment. So that's what I'm sort of fishing for, I guess, is some sense that there's a, that you see something I mentioned in the outline, a genealogy, if you will, of your experience, how you approach things. But perhaps, as you say, it's, you know, it was more general or generic. It was all these things together.
Yeah, it was all these things together, and I enjoyed it. I mean, the bottom line is I really enjoyed it. It was not very systematic. You know, I would just There was a systematic component. Now that you remind me, there was. I did start with like the high school textbooks for physics and biology. Not sure about mathematics, probably not. Physics and biology. And then I started going into undergraduate textbooks and, you know...
It's where I'm at.
In physics and biology when I was still in high school. Mm-hmm. Mathematics, I kept it more as a pure hobby. I mean, I just... With physics, I know I tried to understand better quantum mechanics and relativity, but it got to be very frustrating towards the end because that I needed sort of, you know, guidance. I needed to discuss things, and that wasn't available pretty much. With mathematics, it was much easier to just pick up anything and see how someone solved the problem, and either from the history side or sort of a book side of things. Either way, it was always gratifying. So the desire to go into mathematics, to go back to your question, you know, waned with time as reality sort of took over. And medicine was always like the, what's the right word to describe it? As the fallback option. It was always, to me, I knew my father was a good physician, and he enjoyed it. I thought that was always a viable fallback.
And still all this stuff you were interested in, science.
And I would explore science. And as the interest, as my conviction that I could not make a rewarding, I mean, I didn't want to become a college professor in mathematics. That wasn't my goal at all. I mean, I just didn't have that aspiration.
Mm-hmm. And that's really, I mean, if you want to become a mathematician, yeah, there's not much else.
Yeah, I was really interested in...
Not an actuary.
Yeah, or something. I was interested in seeing how creative I could be in mathematics. I know I was good in solving problems, but that's not the same thing.
Right.
And I didn't have the opportunity to do that. So I think with time, I went back to the sort of the fallback, the concrete option of becoming a physician. But I think from that, I started building the intellectual sort of direction to that, which is to get more into the biological sciences out of, you know, within that context, if you will.
And this is in a sense even before any real definite choice has been made on your part that med school will be it or that I will become a practicing physician,
yeah,
right? I mean, this is
correct.
High school
level decision sort of analysis. And you know, the fallback position actually still is clinical practice, being a physician. I mean, it's funny. It's always been, in my mind, like the fallback position. When I was thinking whether I go into mathematics or medicine, I would say, hey, I'm going to do the undergrad mathematics, but at the same time fulfill the criteria for, you know, the course requirements for medical school. So it was always the fallback position. It still is, you know, in terms of... I'm a physician, but a researcher, but also a physician. So that still is a fallback position. Although, I mean, I must confess that I enjoy clinical medicine tremendously. Mm-hmm. I know many physician scientists, you know...
They want to back off from that. That's why they're the scientists.
Yeah, they're the scientists because they don't want to get into...
Maybe we're jumping ahead, but just at least so that I know to approach it later in more detail... Are you doing much clinical practice here, or
not much? I do sort of round on clinical services 2 months a year. Which
and so you just really drop everything here and go do that? I mean, or you?
I can keep sort of the status quo in the lab, but I can't do much more than that during those 2 months. My function is more of a supervisor, consultant.
Here you mean in the lab? We're
no, in the
okay.
Clinic. Teacher rather than primary caregiver. You know, I round with the house staff, I round with the fellows, but I don't see patients in my clinic. So, because otherwise that kind of commitment becomes too open-ended and I wouldn't be able to do my lab work.
And you can't just go do it for 2 months and then walk away from a patient,
exactly.
Right?
Well, especially in my specialty, you know, where most of the patients have, you know, cancer.
Sure.
You just can't do it. And, you know, if you want to treat those patients, at least our model here is you're very accessible. And if you want to keep that, you can do lab work.
I think rather than go through any more kind of systematic, you know, year-by-year approach to your college education and things like that, we can perhaps, actually, I want to go back and cover a few things, but just kind of take up medical school as a as an experience, and then the transition over to also some interest in basic research. But first, one, you said that, you know, as your parents loosened the reins on you guys because you did pretty well in school, and you said that at some times, perhaps as a teenager, you weren't, and I really wasn't quite sure, I'm not even sure I recall the word, but I get the impression that you thought perhaps your behavior was not that of the most upright young man, but perhaps you got into trouble or you know.
No, I didn't get much into trouble.
But I'm thinking more of your social life or what a kid's life is like, and without asking directly for, you know, all the bad things you did.
Yeah.
But more just, you know, your group of friends or if you were perhaps much more of a loner, that sort of thing. Just what it was like outside of the classroom and the library.
Yeah, it was... remember, let me put you in some sort of context there. First of all, there's a lot of free time. There was a lot of free time growing up in terms of activities after school. I mean, society did not offer children anything compared to like what any normal kid would have in this country. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of free time after school. There's almost nothing structured to do.
No sports teams or high school bands.
Very, very little of that. Yeah, very, very little of that. Even television, you know, television was, you know, would start later in the evening. It's not all day. It wasn't all day television. Boring television too. Summer was long, and idle. Very idle. Was probably summer was a good 3.5 month vacation time. So there was plenty of time to do many things. So it wasn't like I was either at school or in the library or reading at home. I mean, there was really plenty of time. And the other thing is mobility. From, you know, that part of Ras Beirut, you could get from anywhere to anywhere else within 10 to 15 minutes walking. So gives you a lot of mobility that way. You don't even have to borrow the parents' car or anything. So I was a very outgoing person. I had a big group of friends, I would say. No, to the contrary, I mean, growing up as an adolescent, as a teenager, I was, you know, to put, you know, sort of my behavior wasn't really bad, except like I had very long, ugly hair. I mean, I look at, and you know, very uncouth, just a rebel type, you know, teenager. If I look at my pictures now, that's why I say, you know, how the hell did my parents accept that? You know, I think I wouldn't accept that from my children. So I say, how did they accept that? And that's why I put it in that context, that they were so pro-education to this, you know, extent of, that's even okay, you know, he's doing so well at school, that's okay. He can look whatever he wants to look at, to look like. I had a lot of, actually, extracurricular activities. I was very heavily into swimming, so very rigorous swimming training.
And that was organized, I mean, either
in the community
or in the school? Or
both. The school functions were very rudimentary, mostly in the community clubs.
So it's competitive type
Competitive swimming. What else? But then hanging out with, you know, the other kids. You know,
maybe smoking cigarettes or whatever it is. I'm thinking of American culture.
Yeah, I wasn't much of a smoker. I never liked it. But people who smoked or whatever. And, you know, I really hanged out. And, I mean, again, something I wouldn't now understand is, like, during school days, I would maybe not come back home until midnight.
And this, again, is high school age. Not quite 12 or 13, but
no,
more
but
like
maybe
15,
more like 16. 15, 16. Yeah, and...
And your parents weren't concerned?
They weren't concerned. You know, I think their barometer was, you know, how well is he doing at school? And in retrospect, that was, you know, I think I must have, the trust must have influenced me indirectly.
Sure.
You know, I didn't need prodding to act responsibly, maybe because they were so trusting in that, you know.
Mm-hmm. And they treated your, you know, your brother and your sister in sort of the same way, I mean.
Yeah, same way. In many aspects, I was sort of the one to initiate things, and then my brother and sister would have that option, like even competitive swimming. My parents initially, because I started that at maybe 10 or 11, you know, my parents were hesitant about that, but once I got into that, my brother and sister just...
Because it would cut into the academics.
Yeah. Again, sort of, you know, hanging out with friends. I know my brother, just never had problems with that. Initially, I may have had some. I distinctly remember the summers being long and boring. I mean, even with having 2 hours of swim practice every day, reading a book maybe every couple of days, and still and hanging out with friends for another few hours, it was still, you know, mm-hmm. long and
your family didn't travel outside, I mean?
No, my family didn't do much of traveling. My father was a hard-working physician. I mean, he would work 12 hours, or at least he'd be, you know, he'd leave at 7, come back at 7 daily, and he wouldn't take off. I don't recall him taking vacation ever.
And as things got more tense in Beirut and in Lebanon in general, was the, I mean, you talk about this area, you know, this almost this oasis among all the different struggles and conflicts. Was it really pretty much an area that you knew you were restricted to? In other words, you didn't walk into the Druze neighborhoods Maronite or...
As things became uglier, we were pretty much confined to that area. So I would say, and, you know, it got uglier with time. Now it would improve a little bit, but then get back even uglier. So, but that time I was in medical school. So I spent medical school, I was in hospital basically.
24 hours.
Yeah, pretty much like, you know, pretty much that. And actually one aside here is sort of my name didn't help matters either. For some reason, my name, Yusuf Hannoun, by Lebanese standards, would sound like a Maronite's name.
Hmm. The last hour, we're talking about the family name.
The first name, Yusuf, in Lebanon is much more frequently used by Christians.
Because of the... Perhaps,
for some reason. I mean, it's a very common name. It's, you know...
The story.
It's a very archaic name. Not archaic, very old name.
Sure.
It's a Jewish, European... All cultures have a Yusuf or Joseph or something. But in Lebanon, for some reason, unlike in Jordan, let's say, or other countries, it was much more associated with Christian names. And the last name was very ambiguous. Mm. There were Christian and Muslim families in Lebanon with that name. So that made it hazardous, particularly hazardous. I could be nailed by any group, basically. You know, I wouldn't be comfortable.
I guess that's where I'd like to, since we are, we only have a few minutes left on the tape, and I know you have an appointment in a couple of minutes, where maybe we should end up today is, you mentioned earlier on tape that the realization, again, whether it was really more of a subconscious thing or just something that you were always prepared for, that you just really weren't, that staying in Beirut wasn't really going to be an option at some point, or that things were going to get worse and worse. I'm curious, and you're also at the age, admittedly, you spent your concentration was on your studies as an undergraduate, I'm sure, but in med school and then, you know, in residency or whatever, much more intensely that way, but as you say, you could get nailed by anybody. I mean, politics and all these issues were constantly surrounding you. I'm wondering about your political involvement or about how or were you, you know, almost forced to, and you refused. You know, I'm getting us trying to get a sense of how one dealt with what must have been daily kind of encounters with movements and sects of movements, and I mean, just sort of
Well, that's
your commitment or your.
You know, I mean, politics is a very strong element in, or was, in Lebanese society. It absorbs a lot of people's energy. And I attribute it, in my simplistic analysis, to the fact that people don't work as hard, they're not as much trying to achieve, and therefore they don't spend as much time doing their work. And I mentioned sort of that's the trade-off, whether you want to keep the roots and then say, oh, okay, who can what job can we find you so that you stay here, basically, and then you get a job you're not particularly excited about, the job, and the job doesn't really depend on you either.
So you can spend your time with
I mean, like, government functionaries in Lebanon would probably work 3 hours a day at best, and then, spend the rest of the day bullshitting around or going to another more real job. So there's a lot of this idle time, and people don't engage in a lot of either hobbies or productive activities. They engage a lot in just cafe type discussions, and that's on daily basis, where people would also engage in all kinds of social activities the whole week round. I mean, it's not like, oh, we'll go out Saturday. I mean, the people just go visit each other during the days, during weekends. So it's that kind of atmosphere.
And are you ascribing that to the situation and the tension in Beirut?
No, that's cultural. That's
for every human culture.
Not every human. No. I mean, that was Lebanese, maybe Middle Eastern. Again, I mean, I have my own unsubstantiated analysis.
Part of what we do when we interview is to try to get these opinions.
Is that I think the economic basis of wealth in the Middle East has made it very easy for people. With the oil in the oil-rich countries, I mean, definitely the people in the oil-rich countries never sweated it out. And they're given handouts, hundreds of thousands worth of dollars, handouts, and that's why everybody's happy, and no one does, there's no discontent there. But it's also filtered down a lot to the Syrian, Lebanese, Jordanian, and Palestinian communities, because a lot of those people went and worked in the Gulf, including my father, but mostly the people who stayed in the 60s, unlike my father, made a lot of money, because the 60s were the boom days of the Gulf, and those were the days when sort of that part of the Middle East, Syria, Lebanon, Jordan, were the interface with the rest of the world for the Gulf region. So a lot of people made mega bucks there that time, and supporting their family. It was easy, basically. I mean, you could be a millionaire without having sweated it out much, and that permeated society to a great extent. It didn't get all the way to the larger, lower socioeconomic stratum. It didn't filter that much there, but that stratum, I think was the root of all the strife in Lebanon, because it was totally underprivileged and uncatered for. But a lot of the sort of more professional, that we would equate with the hardworking class, let's say, in the States, were not hardworking people. Many were. I mean, I would say a few were, but most were not. I know, like, my father was a very hard worker. Other people that, acquaintances and whatnot were hard. But many were not. And many, would just have all kinds of idle time. And by and large, a lot of people, a government employee or even bank employees, banks would close at 1 o'clock or something like that. So this idle time was, I think, fermented a lot of this, or allowed the fermentation of a lot of this political discussion. Not that it was any more intelligent than, what problem you could have with someone else about U.S. politics, although you only discuss it once every 2 weeks, but they were engaging in it, you know, day in, day out. And with the Civil War, there was a lot of pressure, you know, first to understand what was going on, because your life could depend on it. You know, if you go in the wrong neighborhood, you don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. And it took a few years before things really got defined and demarcated at a geographical level, because, I mean, when the Civil War first started, I didn't know that, you know, this area was mostly Druze, and this was mostly Maronite, and, you know, but obviously within 2-3 years that became very evident. And the other thing is, you know, as things polarize, what happens is, and that's a general statement too, you know, I always like to make sure those are clear as a scientist, I hate to make general statements, is as things become polarized and friction arises, what happens is people, you know, those different sectors of society relinquish decision-making to the wrong people. You know, just like what's happening now in Bosnia. You know, it's not the moderates who are running the decision-making. The Serbs have relinquished their decision-maker to the militia leaders. And the Bosnian Muslims, the same. And the Croats, the same thing happened in Lebanon. I mean, it's a repeat of that.
More than just this nationalist interest at heart.
Yeah, and what happens is you give...
their careers and whatnot.
Yeah, you give decision-making to these people who are either criminals or with very strong criminal tendencies, who are, you know, who are willing to go and murder for you. You first accept that because, hey, they're going to protect me, you know. If we Druze...
We're going to actually... Sorry, I'm running out of tape here.